welcome to another edition of Summer is Coming. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes, and I'm joined by...
Dark Nudge.
And if you have any questions for the show, feel free to email us at summeriscomingpodcast@gmail.com. So, Dark Nudge, something big happened yesterday. Let's just put it this way. I was at my Star Wars League night, and my phone blew up. Why did my phone blow up?
I'm assuming you must have dropped it in something. Some water, maybe a pop or something?
No. What I mean is it was vibrating so much, it felt like I had some sort of illicit object in my pocket.
I'm thinking it's the restricted list.
Yes. The new restricted list came out. Everyone in the group who plays Star Wars pretty much plays Game of Thrones. And in addition to receiving text, everyone was talking about it. And it was quite a night. So there were a lot of cards added to this list. I had heard rumors that it might be a fairly substantial restricted list, but to be honest, I never guessed that at least five or six of these cards would be on the list. So, Dark Nash, what is the card that shocked you the most that it made the list?
I'm going to say Knight of the Flowers. To me, Bera wasn't anywhere competitive. It wasn't showing up, you know, on the tops of a lot of tournaments, and then all of a sudden we see Knight of the Flowers plus Robert Baratheon restricted. I can understand why for Robert, because he's the center of a lot of combos. You can still use him in a ton of different decks to do crazy things, and I can see that they might be worried about that. But Knight of the Flowers, really good card, solid character, but I don't think Bera needs to have him restricted. How do you feel about that, Tiny?
That one is a head-scratcher to me. Like, I just kind of felt like Baratheon's the worst house. I haven't made any secret about that. And then Baratheon gets three cards added to the list. And then I look at Greyjoy, and Greyjoy is also not in that upper crust, but Greyjoy Winter is still really good. They're lurking right there, and they get just a refugee added to the list. I was really surprised by that specific disparity.
Yeah, I was also surprised by the amount of Martell cards. Like, I've always been saying that I think Sivis should have been added to the list. I think it really fits that it was. But just the sheer number of other Martell cards that were added, such as the Scourge, the Orphans of the Green Blood, of course, as all the refugees were their refugee. To me, it's like, wow, we've almost hit Martell now to a place where, you know, only two or three builds can be competitive. Well, before they had such a plethora of builds they could use at a competitive level. But again, they weren't one of the top three or four builds near the end of the season, so I'm not sure why they were hit so hard until I really started to think about it. Why do you think Martell was hit so hard, Tiny? Then I'll tell you why I thought.
I'm not exactly sure, other than the fact that Martell's always good. Martell has so many ways for icon control, or control in general, that even just removing those three cards, I mean, I've heard people say, oh, Martell's dead. I don't think so. They have a zillion other ways to control. They're just slightly less efficient. And so the way I view this list as a whole is to try to eliminate that upper crust of efficient cards, and Martell just has a lot of them. The one card in Martell that really shocked me was Orphan of the Green Blood. I mean, I know he's really great, and he deserves to be on this list when you see the other cards on it. He's just such a cornerstone of Martell. To me, it would be almost like restricting Iron Mines. You know, every Greyjoy deck runs Iron Mines. It's a zero-cost setup card. It's ridiculously powerful, but it's the foundation of Greyjoy. And I kind of felt like the Orphans were the foundation of Martell, and so I was really surprised to see them pull that away.
So when I saw the list, I actually thought to myself, why is Iron Mines not on this list? But before we can go into that, so I think one of the reasons that Martell was hit so hard was because they wanted to hit icon control. And I think the reason they want to do that was because, to me, one of the reasons they made the list so big was to get rid of that upper tier, like you said, but was also to increase the design space, let people build a whole bunch of new decks and a whole bunch of new things. And one of the problems with icon removal is this new naval enhancement type of deck gets hammered by it, from what I've you know, little I've played with it, you remove the icon, they can't use all this great naval stuff. So I think, you know, the designers said to themselves, we want to have people to be able to play with these new, you know, this new mechanic. We want to have people to have fun doing it, and we want it to be competitive. And if we want to do that, then we're going to have to make sure that we tone down some of this icon removal that Martell has. And this was a very easy way of doing it.
I agree with that. But what does surprise me is that I feel like icon removal and Neil sort of go hand in hand. And Lannister is really left with its Neil. They didn't restrict you killed the wrong dwarf. They did restrict Pentoshi Manor, which is great. But I just feel like Lannister still has a ton of Neil that is probably not quite as efficient as Martell's icon removal, and that's why I think Martell was better than Lannister. But I still think Lannister has a lot of control.
Yeah, I agree. And I see Lannister is going to be the control house now, I think.
That may be. I mean, I still look at Martell and I go, if you want, you can choose your restricted card to be the Scourge. You can play Brimstone. You can play Lorelu. You can play the new Greenblood Merchants. You couple them with Maester Miles. Then you play Prince's Wrath. Then you play the Viper's Rage. You can still do a ton of icon removal. It's just that it's not quite as efficient as it was before.
And Martell still has some of those old, really, really good locations like Lost Oasis, right? Where they can, you know, Neil Lost Oasis to give one of their Martell characters stealth. And then if that character bypasses someone with stealth, that person gets Neiled. So they still have some nice control elements. They're just not as good as the ones they had, and it's not icon removal. So I'm not saying that Martell is dead, like some people are saying. I'm just saying that their competitive builds are now just one or two instead of a half dozen. Is that bad? I don't know. Most other houses only have one or two competitive builds.
Yeah, I actually see them as having potentially more than that. What I really think we're going to see from Martell is a little bit more variety in using some of these older cards that we haven't seen people use. Like, I just don't see people use Prince's Wrath. A one-off, non-floppable icon removal just doesn't compete with the Orphans, with the Scourge, with all these other cards. And I think we're just going to start seeing more of those cards make it in. For instance, you could just take out your Game of Savasses and throw in Prince's Wrath, and your build is pretty similar. You just, you know, kind of exchanged your events for a really broken Savas for a pretty darn good Prince's Wrath. And then you take out the Orphans and you put in, you know, some other characters, maybe Maester Miles, maybe the new Orphans, maybe the Greenblood Merchants go right in for the Orphans of the Greenblood. I'm not even sure that the builds change that much. I still see a Knights of the Hollow Hill Gaston Grey build is really good. I still think Maester Rush could be decent. It's not going to be as strong as it was, but I think it could be decent.
Well, I think if you're going to do a rush from Martell, you'd be probably using Dane-type characters now. But, you know, in these small replacements you're talking about, you've added another cost, basically, to Martell, which is that they have to have influence. Now, Martell has lots of ways to generate influence, so that's not huge. But it means you have to worry about another resource in their builds, because the Princess Wrath requires an influence to use. And then once you have one influence, you start thinking to yourself, maybe I should put two, maybe I should, you know, be able to trigger Red Vengeance. And I think it automatically opens up all these new design doors. So that is great. Like I said, I still think Martell has a couple competitive builds.
Yeah, me too. So we were talking about Lannister a little bit already. And the two cards that got hit for Lannister were the Mountain Refugee and Pentoshi Manor. I was a little bit surprised by Pentoshi Manor just because it's such a new card. Since I've been playing, there's never been a situation where they release a card and almost instantly restrict it. I know it happened with the Laughing Storm, but I'm not aware of this happening to any other cards.
Yeah, well, they did let people play with Pentoshi Manor. The Laughing Storm was different, as in it got restricted before anyone even got to play with it. So Pentoshi Manor was used at Worlds. I've played against it a lot, and it's really bonkers good. So I can see it going onto this restricted list very quickly. I think it fits. I actually am surprised that there wasn't more put on here from Lannister. Since we see like Night of the Flowers and Robert Baratheon, why isn't Cersei on here?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I thought for sure the Viper would be on. Once I heard the list was getting big, I thought it was going to be Cersei and the Viper. And so it seems almost like they did an interesting switch that they put a ton of control stuff on and left the rushier stuff so that maybe this is an attempt to even out to some degree rush versus control. You leave all the rush elements alone, you hit the control elements. Now, of course, that theory doesn't work quite as well with Baratheon, but they have a zillion rush characters anyways. Just hitting Knight of Flowers doesn't do that much. You could always just stick in a different rush character.
Yeah, and with only a few restricted cards, I think Lannister's in a very good place to be able to build a variety of decks, most of them Neil-centric. And like I was saying earlier, I think it's going to be the control house in the coming regional season.
Yeah, which card would you pick out of this list? It's really difficult for me because I've been going exclusively Castellan of the Rock because the cash just dies to Tinlink too easy. I never get enough out of it. But now if you're choosing between Pentoshi Manor, a Pyromancer's cash without the Tinlink in the environment, and Castellan of the Rock, who gets taken out by Dissension, which is pretty prevalent, which one are you leaning towards?
I think I'm still going with Castellan probably. Now, to me, the Pyromancer's cash is not needed in Lannister. They have so much draw, and if I wanted to stick, you know, an attachment in for more draw, then I probably wouldn't be using the cash. I'd probably be choosing something like the Widow's Wail to get some more draw.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. The one deck I would use the cash in is House of Dreams Tunnels deck. I've seen this quite a bit because it helps protect your tunnels from cards like Search and Detain.
Yes, I would agree with that. There'd be certain circumstances that you might pick the cash, but I think otherwise the cash is going to... It's basically soft banned.
Yeah, another card I think is soft banned is Search and Detain. It was interesting because I said that before, so apparently I'm a broken record. But I really think it's soft banned now. Like, I look at every single deck I've ever played Search and Detain in, and I go, yeah, I can't pick Search and Detain anymore. I love the card, and especially in a House of Dreams environment. Like, that's the one card out of Targ that I'm really sad to lose from the House of Pain or Bruno deck, or as I call it, the Tiny deck. I'm really sad to lose that card because now I have no answer for House of Dreams cards.
Right. I still think it might see some play in Greyjoy. Greyjoy hasn't been really hit hard by this restricted list, so I think we could still see Search and Detain in some Greyjoy decks.
I think that's true. It won't be in Winter, of course. So then what we're left with is something like... one deck I could see that in is like a House of Dreams Seastone Chair deck. I was putting Search and Detain in that deck for a while, so I think that's still a possibility.
Right. Or in Black Sails, which I think we'll see a lot more of as, you know, more cards are available. Greyjoy looks to be one of the strongest right now, so maybe in a couple chapter packs we'll see some Greyjoy Black Sails using it.
So this is assuming Black Sails doesn't go on the restricted list really soon?
Right.
Because right. I think it will be.
I think we got a couple months at least, because they normally take 2-3 months to release a new restricted list. So it won't be till midway through regionals that we would see something like that happen.
Yeah, I actually don't think it'll be restricted till about Worlds, because we won't see enough new cards to bring it to that totally broken status where I think it's going to go until we get closer to Worlds.
So we talked a little bit about Lannister, and you know, whenever I think of Lannister, I always think of the Starks immediately. So Stark got a few cards on the restricted list. Bear Island, No Quarter, and Mira.
The Refugee, of course.
Oh, yeah, and the Refugee.
The nice thing about Stark is I feel like they don't care that much about the Refugee. The Refugee is great for Stark because he has the Intrigue icon, but they still have the mobs. They still have tons of cheap one-cost characters. Like, I often don't run Hodor or Shaggy Dog, and now I will. I'll just pull out the Refugees and say, okay, I don't get a zero-cost character. That stinks, but at least I get one-cost characters that are actually good.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think the Refugees are going to hit Stark very hard. I think it hits a lot of other builds substantially. You don't even really know it until you start running mock setups with all these different builds that you used to. And you start seeing that, you know, your average setup is like almost 0.5 of a card down because just because the refugees aren't there, because that zero is just so good on setup.
Yeah, the deck that I'm really worried about is Greyjoy Winner. Like, when I first saw that only Winner got on the list, I said, oh my goodness, Greyjoy Winner is the top deck now. And then I started thinking, wait, Greyjoy Winner's whole thing is that, yes, it's choking both of you, but its gold curve is so low, it can just spit out these refugees and boatswains. But I'm a little bit worried that if you pull the refugees out of that deck, now it ends up choking itself to the point where it can't get quite the card advantage it was able to.
I think it's going to still be very, very strong.
I do too.
Especially with everyone else's gold curve getting pushed up a little bit because they won't have refugees. I think it'll be very strong. And, you know, the worse your opponent's setup is for Greyjoy Winter, the better it is for Greyjoy Winter. So if they're setting up just one card, you're so happy.
Oh, yeah. If they set up one card, they've essentially lost at that point, unless they're Hollow Hill.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm saying one character.
Like the yeah. That's what I meant.
The lower number of characters, the better it is.
All right, so back to Stark. The big, big, huge thing for me was not Mirror Reed. Obviously, Mirror Reed was going on. If the list is over five cards, Mirror Reed's on it. If the list is over one card, Mirror Reed's on it. The question is, no quarter. That was a huge one because, for me, the big change there is you can no longer do something like this. Bring Mirror out of shadows, blank something, attack with her, drop no quarter, and kill it. So, for instance, let's say you have you're playing against Greyjoy. You can do all this, blank their saves, and then kill them all with this two-card beautiful little combo. Now you need a more elaborate combo. You have to have Mirror Reed come out, blank the saves. You have to have a Warcrest character that you can also attack with. Then you need to have Die by the Sword. You just have to have more pieces in place to make the murder go.
Right, and exactly. And of course, Mira's best with Winter, and now that the agenda's restricted, you know, are you going to be running Winter without the bonus of getting to discard a card from your opponent's hand? I think it does, you know, even out Stark Winter, definitely. But when I look at Stark Knights, I don't see huge changes for Knights. You know, they have to decide between Mira and No Quarter, basically.
Yeah, for me, I was always running my knights with Mira and like three no quarters and two die by the swords. So now what I'll do probably is run Mira, three die by the swords, and have slightly less direct kill and probably still be perfectly happy with that.
And I will do the opposite of you. I will just drop Mira.
See, I can't imagine dropping Mira. This is how I think of Stark. What Stark used to be pretty blah. Stark got Mira Reed, arguably the best card in the game. Stark became phenomenal.
I think because you have so much kill in Stark Knights, you can do without Mira and still be fine. And because less people are going to play the Maester's Path now. Mira was great against the Maester. So good. She's good against so much. But, I mean, one of the key reasons Stark Knights wanted her in the deck was to have that extra little push against the Maesters. I think Maesters are going to become less prevalent with the new restrictions. And because of that, Mira won't be as important.
Yep, I think you're right. Let's make a quick segue to Maesters then. I think not only are they going to be less prevalent, I think when you run them, they're just going to be less good. I mean, you're losing the Conclave, who was that bomb character that you could just drop in for free. So you could, you know, control stuff with the chains, and then, you know, the Conclave actually won the challenges and did all the heavy lifting. So you lose that card. You lose Tin Link, which was taking out all the attachments. So now you're just left with, you know, some really good control challenge cards, some good chains, but the Maesters in most houses just aren't quite good enough, in my opinion, to have, like, a really good Maester deck. I feel like you have to run them with other great characters, whereas before I didn't really feel like that was the case. Like Martell Maesters, you could basically just run all Maesters and Viper, and you're good to go.
Yeah, and I mean, the Conclave was their way of rushing as well, and now you've just taken away that rush element from so many Maester decks, which is good, because now Maesters are kind of like a control-y deck, like you were saying, which I think to me, is more of a sense of what the Maesters would be from the book. They weren't these huge, you know, people swinging the power of kingdoms very quickly. And
yeah, it's like, for instance, Martell Maester is going to be a really interesting deck now, because if you take out the Conclave, you take out the refugees, they don't have that many great Maesters now. So now then you're left with, well, Martell does have great characters, so you can just play more of the great characters. Maybe it'll go back to a build similar to what I was running before the rush, where I had like Gaston Grey in there as one control element, then Maester's Path was another control element, and I would control the challenges that way. So maybe that will be a legitimate build coming out of Martell now.
So we've talked about almost all the houses now, except for Targ, I believe. So yes. Targ lost the
Nothing.
Hatchling's Feast.
I couldn't believe Targ lost no cards.
Really, you truly believe that the three cards they had restricted weren't important cards?
Oh, I must have misread the list.
Yeah, they did lose Long Lances, the Hatchling's Feast, and Aegon's Hill. I'm actually surprised that's all they lost. What about you, Tiny?
Yeah, I'm a little surprised they didn't lose Threat from the North. Just because that's such an amazing plot, but at the same time, I kind of viewed it like Iron Mines. Like, it's just such a backbone of the deck, it's kind of hard to imagine them losing it.
Yeah, I don't see it as a backbone to Targ. You know, I think that plot's used in some other decks as well, and because of that, it would be like, why penalize other decks by restricting this? But what I've liked to have seen was probably one or two other Targ cards on here just to cement it, like Incinerate.
See, to me, if you are going to put Hatchling's Feast on here, I don't think you need to put Incinerate. Like, the way the list works now is that you have to make a choice. You're either doing a Jumper Recursion deck with some burn, you're doing a Aegon's Hill kill characters out of the hand with some burn, with some recursion, or you're doing heavy burn with some recursion. So it still has flexibility, but it loses that ultra flexibility where every card you draw is amazing and can just completely change the board. You have to make a decision now in which direction you want the deck to go.
To an extent, I really don't think the Targ, you know, House of Pain deck got hurt much at all with these restrictions. And I don't think many of the other Targ builds got hurt that much with these restrictions either. So because of that, I don't think it did enough to Targ to overall affect their, you know, their dominance of the meta. I think they'll continue to be a very strong house.
Yeah, I'll address that as one who's played that deck pretty extensively. I've been playing it now with the changes, and it changes it a lot. I mean, at least the way I played the deck, you know, some people played the deck where Hatchling's Feast was just to play with Threat to clear the board, and you can find other ways to do that. The way I used Hatchling's Feast was a control card, you know, so it's just any random challenge, I might play Hatchling's Feast. You never really know when I'm going to play it. Whenever I feel like I want to win a challenge, that's when I'll play it. So it loses a lot of that flexibility, and Aegon's Hill is a huge loss. That's that card that just makes people cry, because you have all this burn, you have all this recursion, so they want to hold cards back, and then they can't. So now at least your opponent has a lot more options. Okay, so that's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is Targ's still really, really good.
So what you're saying is it's still a really, really good deck.
Yes, probably another card or two should have been restricted. But to me, I don't know what it would be. Like, those are the obvious ones that are game changers. Every other card in the deck is just, oh, that's cool. I got that card. That'll be useful. Every card's useful. It's one of those rare decks where almost every card you draw is just useful. And especially the character base. There's no single other character in that deck that I couldn't just replace with another one. I have a list of about 8 characters. You know, that Bruno and I have this list of characters, basically, and we're like, okay, if we could fit all these characters, we would. And Bruno picks a couple that I don't pick, and I pick a couple Bruno doesn't pick. But if any of those got restricted, we'd just be like, okay, whatever, what's the next card on the list? So you may be right in that Incinerate would be the one card, or maybe even or maybe Street even flame kissed. But the problem is, then they don't really have any burn, and Targ is a burn deck.
Well, to say they don't have any burn, I think would be stretching it. I mean, they could still have Field of Fire or something, right?
I think if we do that, if we take the good burn away and the redundant burn, then we knock Targ back to where it used to be. Because remember when Targ was irrelevant, it was irrelevant before it got Incinerate and Long Lances. Because it just didn't have that redundant burn that you knew you could draw into.
I liked Targ when it was... No, it was the attachment burn house, right? So you were using attachments and recycling those attachments to burn. But
sure,
now we've stepped back
terrible.
From that.
It was a terrible deck. It was just not anywhere close to tier one.
That's not true.
Okay, let me rephrase that. In my meta, it was awful. Only a couple people played it. No one could ever win with it. It was just a really hard deck because, it, like I said, it didn't have the redundancy. And the only, if you wanted to pack redundancy in, it meant playing really specific burn cards that weren't very good and weren't cost-effective and weren't efficient. And, yeah, we could take it back to that point. I'm just not sure it needs to be. I may change my mind, though. I am looking at it and saying, wow, Targ looks really, really strong right now.
You know, it wasn't just Long Lancers. It was a couple other key ambush characters that brought Targ to a place where they could play Pure Jumper, right?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, when I look at it, I say, you know, what was the other big cards? Company of the Cat. You know, just having that, you know, a little bit more card draw, a big four-coster that you could jump in, that kind of stuff made a big difference, too.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is they also got a good card in Missandei. So... they're getting another influence character that can't be discarded by their own threat. So I definitely agree with you. Targ is going to be very, very strong. All right, so what do you think about Kings of Winter and Kings of Summer being restricted? I know, you know, I've heard Bruno complain endlessly about these two objectives, that they're just too easy. You can just put them in any old deck without really any dedication to those specific seasons. And he... has been clamoring for these things to be restricted for at least 6 months. So where did you stand on them before, and where do you stand on them now, seeing this expanded list?
You know, I almost feel like the Kings of Summer shouldn't have been. I say that because I've only been playing the game for about 2 years now, and I've never seen a huge summer-themed deck win any major tournament. Now, I know... Summer was a good deck out of Martell, was a good deck out of a bunch of other things. I see them place well. I never see them win them. Winter, I see Greyjoy Winter winning. I see Stark Winter winning. I feel, personally, that there is more cards that interact with Winter in a positive way than there are cards that interact with Summer in a positive way. And because of that, making it Winter gives you more positive effects. You know, you can trigger stuff like your Marauders, you know, Mirror Reed can blank two cards, etc. While Kings of Summer, I'm struggling. Can you think of any really good effects that we get for it being Summer?
Of course, Maester of the Sun.
So I can think of Maester of the Sun and the Knight from Baratheon that will get renowned. Summer Knight.
Yeah, that doesn't count.
For Winter, I can think of, you know, Marauders, Mirror Reed, Silent Killers, I think it is, from Barrow, where they get to kill a character if they attack alone and it's Winter. You just have so many more really good effects. And you know, Robb Stark gets plus two to everyone instead of plus one in Stark. And because of that, I think Winter was more prevalent. And therefore, for me, I would love to see, you know, just the Winter agenda. But I can understand why they put the Kings of Summer. Because once you restrict the Winter agenda, Summer is like a freebie, right? There's no one... I shouldn't say no, I say... There would be a lot less people playing the Winter agenda. And because of that, they were almost forced to restrict the Summer agenda.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That have you ever played a Summer deck?
Yes, a couple times.
Okay, so I've played a Summer deck. I brought it to a tournament. And it's basically... unbeatable in a winter-free meta. Like, if you can go into a tournament knowing there's going to be no winter, you would almost be stupid not to play a summer deck before the restriction. because you get free card, free gold. Doesn't matter if anything triggers off of it. Just getting a free draw every single turn is ridiculous. The whole tournament, I would have these monster hands. And then, of course, I ran into a winner deck knowing that it basically auto-loses to winner and got my soul crushed. And there were tons of winner decks. There was Greyjoy winner. There was Stark winner. They were both amazing builds. And now that those, at least Stark winner, is pretty much gone, it makes it more likely you could find a tournament where you could run through without hitting a winner deck. So I think you're right. They had to restrict summer if they're going to hit winter.
Now, that's not to say that we're not going to see some people playing seasons without the agenda, because I think you might. People might make a decision to say, hey, I still want to have, you know, the minus one gold from a White Raven and trigger my winter type abilities. But because I'm running some other restricted card, I'm not going to run the agenda.
Yeah, definitely. So we already talked about the Conclave. What about Retaliation? Were you surprised by that one?
Not really. I mean, it is in almost every single top tier deck, and it really is a little too good. And, you know, a lot of people I hear are saying things like, oh, everyone will just replace it with Men of Pride. Well, that doesn't fit in every deck, because sometimes you have non-uniques that you want to keep those keywords on, like Stealth or Renown or Deadly or whatever it is. More often Stealth and Deadly. You know, so when you lose those keywords, it can be a blow to you, and because of that, at least there's some kind of disadvantage to running Men of Pride over something like Retaliation.
Yeah, I agree. I still think Men of Pride will slot in for most decks, but Retaliation was just one of those ultra-efficient cards that was in every single deck. I mean, knowing your opponent is going to go first, period, is a really useful tool. And I mean, people forget about that part of it and just look at the 4-2, but that part of it is critical, and having that knowledge, and it's just a useful card. Also, the 8 initiative wins initiative for things like Bay of Ice. So having a 4-0-2 is a pretty substantial step down from Retaliation.
So what's your overall impression of the list? What do you think you accomplished?
First of all, I'll just say I like the list a lot. I think it accomplished what I am thinking is the goal, which is to take out the ultra, ultra efficient cards from the top tier decks that were completely stagnating the meta. A lot of those decks are still going to be top tier. For instance, Targ is still going to be amazing. Stark is still going to be great. I think they could restrict 10 more cards from Martell, and Martell would still be awesome because they're Martell. But the point is, those decks are no longer so far above the curve and so efficient that you just can't play any other decks. I think tier 1.5 decks, some of them might creep into tier 1, but a lot of them won't. But the difference is, they won't be unplayable against one of these tier 1 decks. Whereas before, if you brought a 1.5 deck against Stark Winter Murder or Targ Knights of the Hollow Hill, the chances you won were pretty astronomically slim. Now I feel like if you're a Bruno, if you're an Atkinson, and you bring one of those decks, you're probably still going to beat these tier 1 decks because they're just less efficient than they used to be.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a good opportunity for people to be able to try new builds out. And I think you're right. I think that basically what they've done is they've taken the tier 1 decks, and instead of having like a top tier in that and a bottom tier, they've kind of squeezed a lot of the decks together so that they made the difference between them so much more small, which is great for the overall game. I think this also gives an opportunity for some of the better players in the game to shine. I say that because, in my opinion, what makes a great player isn't just their ability to drive a deck, but it's equally important for their ability to build a deck. And I think that the, you know, top tier players will have a great opportunity now to tweak, change, or create whole new decks. And because of that, for the, you know, short period of maybe the first 2 to 4 regionals or something, we're going to see hopefully some innovative decks from some of these top tier players that You know, no one is going to be suspecting, or maybe they suspect it, but they couldn't build it themselves because they haven't had the opportunity to net deck or see that information until after the tournaments that, you know, we'll get to see some of this amazing, cool new stuff. And I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that's been the one weird thing about this game in comparison to other games I've played. In this game, I go into a tournament and I know all the best decks. Like, if someone brings a surprise deck, it's an awful deck. Like, I have yet to see a surprise deck that was actually great. Whereas in the other games I've played, that has not been the case. I thought I knew what was going to happen, and I guessed 80% of the decks, but there would be 20% of the decks would be surprise decks, and the very best players would have crafted this new, cool thing no one had seen before and crush everyone with it because they would have something different that people hadn't planned for. And I've just been surprised that we haven't seen this in this game. And I think you're right. I think this is one of these moments where there is a window where that can happen. The window's going to dry up real quick, though, because as soon as these decks see the light of day, everyone's going to know about them and everyone's going to be playing them.
Actually, I think FFG has done something which is great this time around with their tournaments. They've changed the rules so that as chapter packs are released, they are now going to be legal immediately for the tournament. So as regional season progresses, we're not going to be waiting for 3 months while the game's stagnant. We're going to see a slow progression of new decks. So that means, you know, up front we're going to have 4 or 5 regionals that some of these great players will hopefully bring these super cool decks to. And then 2 months later, when 2 more packs are released, they'll be bringing a totally different, totally new cool deck to that regional. So it really allows for continuous building, which is just awesome.
I mean, I agree and disagree with that. I don't think we're going to see that many brand new decks out of one chapter pack. Like, that just hasn't been how the game has worked for me. The game usually works like this. There's a new chapter pack. People go through and they find a card that slides into this deck, a card that slides into that deck. Now, if that happens, that will be great. The other problem I have is I don't actually like the idea of, like, hey, a pack came out Thursday and there's a regional Saturday. I really think there should have been some sort of 2-week delay or something. I mean, you can still say all the packs are going to be legal soon after they come out. You don't have to wait an eternity for the next FAQ. But I really don't like the immediacy of, boom, new chapter pack, tournament.
I'll have to say the one part I don't like is, yeah, it's something like that. They didn't say, you know, 7 days after. Because for me, what about these players that might be traveling some from place like, I don't know, Canada, for instance, who don't get the chapter packs out for a couple weeks after the rest of the state? So, I might travel down to New York. I won't have that pack available to me. So I'll have to play a deck without those cards for sure, which is fine. But it can be annoying for some other players, I can see. But I think overall, the reason I think that deck will change drastically with the first, you know, 2 or 3 new packs is because people will start playing with Black Sails. Because right now, I think people, you know, with one pack, people are like, well, Black Sails is cool. I can build a Black Sail deck. Is it really good? No, there's just not enough naval characters. But, you know, 2 or 3 new packs, as long as they introduce naval characters, I think we'll get to see some Black Sail decks.
Yeah, I think we definitely will. I really think Black Sails is going to be phenomenal. I've played with it about 10 times now in this limited Black Sails environment, and it's pretty darn good already. And I haven't done much with it. I haven't sat down and tweaked it. I basically just threw a bunch of junk together that's good in Greyjoy and played it and pretty much wrecked everyone hard with it and went, huh, wow, this has some serious potential. But just as a solution for you, Dark Nudge, instead of going down to a random tournament, why don't you just come to Kingdom Con in April in San Diego? That would be April 4th through 7th, and I would be happy to loan you any new cards that you need for the tournament. And just so everyone knows, that tournament is actually going to have 3 regionals. It's going to have Star Wars on Friday. It's going to have Game of Thrones Saturday. It's going to have Netrunner on Sunday. Come on down to what I'm calling it, Mini Worlds.
See, I think it's only in the States that you guys just normally do one regional at a time or something. Because here, like for the Ottawa regional, we're going to be having all 4 games. So X-Wing and the 3 LCGs. And I know that the other Canadian places that have applied for regionals while we're still waiting for FFG to post, you know, anything outside of the States, also applied to make sure that they were going to be having multiple regionals within their weekend. Now, the one problem we have here is that some of our regionals are actually going to overlap. So it's going to be similar to what happened in Worlds, where we're going to have, because of, obviously, if you're doing four in 2 or 3 days, it's tough to make sure that you don't have some overlapping.
Right. So it sounds like what you're saying is that we're just smarter in the U.S. not to do that.
No, that's not what I'm saying, but I understand. You're just some kind of professor or something. You got a PhD. Is that right, Tiny?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're not that smart of a guy. You can't figure this kind of stuff out.
No, definitely not. So, in conclusion, Dark Naj, what do you give the list? A thumbs up or a thumbs down?
Huge thumbs up. Great work by FFG. I mean, it really shows that they're caring about the game. They're caring about competitive play. I wish there was more for competitive play. You know, non-sanctioned tournaments make the not have such a huge, you know, space between regionals and worlds so that there's more play, but can't have everything. This is great. You know, it shows that the developers, I think, understand the meta, play the game, and most importantly, listen to their customers.
Yep, I agree. I'll give it a big, big thumbs up. They did a good job. They got it out in a timely manner. I would have liked to see it a little earlier, but a month before Kingdom Con, that's not too bad.